This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Antik. 2 months ago, the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development proposed to abolish the caning of minors in court, prompting many quarters among the Malaysian public to ask whether the act of caning itself would eventually be criminalised. We speak to consultant pediatrician and president of the National Early Childhood Intervention Council, Dr. Amar Singh, about the practice of caning and what the Child Act says. Dr. Amar, welcome to the show. You wrote an op-ed in a local online news portal last November about receiving an unusual request through your hospital. Tell us what happened.
Well, I received a request from the courts in Ipoh through my hospital director for us to go and confirm that a child is medically fit to be caned in court. And I thought that was really unusual. I haven't ever received a request like that before. Huh? And so I tried to resist going. Mm-hmm. I tried to not send anyone. But after checking up, we recognized that we would be in contempt of court if we don't go. So I went myself instead of allowing any of my younger members to go. Yeah.
So what were the circumstances that led to that sentence of caning a child?
I think this is a 16. This event happened when this boy was 16 years old. I think he had fallen in with bad friends who persuaded him to go and rob a house together with them, and he was caught. He was then given a bond for a while, and he broke the bond. It's not really a bad chap. I met him personally, had some time to talk with him and his family. He's just a misguided individual. But because he broke the bond, the court then offered him either a placement in Henry Gurney School or whipping with what they call a light cane. It's anything but light, but that's what they called it. And the family chose that because they didn't want to be separated from him. You know, and that's how it ended up. At that time, he had reached almost 18.
Mm-hmm. So your role there is to assess whether the child is medically fit. How do you define what is medically fit?
I think I tried to persuade the court that he wasn't medically fit, that he wasn't ready for this event. But the magistrate made it very clear that all I would be doing is deferring his sentence to another day, and that one sentence is passed. The only way to get past the sentencing is to go and appeal to the High Court. And I tried to persuade the mother to do this, but they weren't in a position to do so. So what I was required to actually physically examine him, which is very difficult in court. I had to borrow the magistrate's chambers. I had to take his blood pressure, listen to his heart with a stethoscope. But I think all those things are really fairly routine for a doctor to say he's physically fit. But I don't think he was emotionally or psychologically ready for the caning. He said he was, but I think he didn't understand the size and the magnitude of the caning. It's not your parent caning you. This is organized caning done by prison authorities who are used to caning adult offenders. And so they try to execute the maximum punishment possible in the caning. Yes.
Was this executed in court, or was it like those we see in the video where they have to stand attached and tied to a device?
He wasn't tied to a device. He had to take off his underwear, left his pants on. Again, we had difficulty doing that changing in the magistrate's quarters. He had his pants on, then he was asked to lean forward on a desk, and a certain number of people were present, his lawyer, the magistrate, the court interpreter, mum, the prison authorities, and myself, and one police inspector. I think the rest of the people were cleared from the court, and then he was whipped publicly in court. Yes.
So this child in question was 18 years of age.
At that time,
yeah,
yes.
Mm-hmm. But if he was younger, would the prison guard who was... I assume it's the prison guard who's the one doing the whipping. Would he have calibrated his force if the child was a bit younger?
Well, there's two kinds of caning. Mm-hmm. I think the adult caning is above shoulder caning and the children's caning is below shoulder. I'm not sure. I think that they are trained to do it, as I said, with the maximum force possible. I'm not sure I could withstand this caning. I don't know what the above shoulder caning looks like. Mm-hmm. But this one is actually a very violent action. You know, I think after the first stroke, He almost fell down. I could see that he didn't anticipate it would be so severe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's no requirement to assess the child's emotional or psychological health?
They did not ask us to do so, but I could have argued and used that as a means to delay his caning, as I said. But the magistrate made it very clear that all I would do would be deferring it to another date. And I thought that would actually add to the emotional trauma by having to prepare again to come for another day.
Mm-hmm. You wrote in the article as well that this is something that happens on a weekly basis. Multiple childs are caned every week. I'm sure if that's the case, many other of your colleagues would have been asked to witness such a whipping as well, caning. What are their thoughts on this?
I think what happens, you see, in Perak, this is the first one that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I then subsequently made inquiries and I found there were two up north in Kedah. And then the magistrate was very kind to tell me, she checked with her colleagues in the Klang Valley and she says it's happening weekly in PJ. So it's not an unusual punishment to be executed by a magistrate. So I suspect what's happening in the Klang Valley is they send the youngest people. They probably don't come from pediatric departments. They come from just the outpatient departments and they're sent, this is your tugas, so you just go. They probably do their job and I don't know how many of them get traumatized. I don't know how many of them stay for the whipping. You're not required to. So I decided to stay because I wanted to see what I was being responsible. I held myself responsible for the activity as well. So I suspect they may have talked and chit-chat with their colleagues, but I doubt anybody from a pediatric department has ever gone. So I suspect nobody senior has witnessed this to go and make a fuss about it. I think so. I'm the first guy. And to add to it, I've just received a second invitation to go. And I'm horrified that we still continue to do this despite the kind of attention we have given to saying that there are other options in the law.
Because I would assume that a pediatrician would be the first doctor you call if you're going to cane a child, a legalized state sanction.
I think the Child Act is very clear. Any doctor. It doesn't specify the kind of doctor. So it depends, I guess, who the letter is addressed to and who then. In this case, the magistrate addressed it to my hospital director who automatically sent it to me. Had it been addressed to the state director, perhaps it might have gone to an outpatient department.
How does you mentioned the Child Act. How does the Child Act defines corporal punishment?
I don't think the Child Act defines corporal punishment at all. The Child Act has got two areas. One which talks about physical punishment. And it says very clearly that if any child is physically injured by leaving an observable, sustainable mark, that is defined in the Child Act as punishment of a child, physical injury. That's considered abuse. That means if you hit your child in any way, even with a cane, and leave an observable, sustainable injury, which means you leave a cane mark, you actually can be charged under the Child Act as child abuse. That's very clear. Hardly anybody actually has been charged under that act for that purpose. And then later on in the Act, where it talks about crimes by children, they allow a child aged 10 and above who is male to be whipped up to 10 times by court with a light cane below shoulder. So they don't discuss the word corporal punishment at all. They just discuss this as one of the possible punishments for children who have committed crimes above the age of 10. But don't forget the other part, where the Child Act clearly says anybody who hits a child and leaves an injury is actually against the law. I think these two things actually conflict in the law directly.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to say. So what the court does is actually contravening one of the provision in the Act.
And more importantly, it convenes the United Nations Convention for the Rights of Children, which we are signatories to, which the Child Act is built upon, that actually we shouldn't punish children in this way. Yeah.
So you mentioned that one of the alternatives was sending the kid to a Henry Gurney school. What were the other options?
Other option would be actually to send to someone who could work with the child and after that give you a report to say that he has changed and he's moved forward.
That's
what we call a counsellor, yes. Mm-hmm. And we were actually prepared to do that. We were prepared to work with diversion for young offenders because we feel young offenders are very different from hardened criminals. They need some time and struggle. And I suspect that we can probably help the vast majority in that way. But I don't see the courts using this mechanism. Of course, it requires individuals on the medical side or the psychology fraternity who are willing to take on this job. And for me and my team, we're actually very happy to offer this support.
Mm-hmm. How effective are the Henry Gurney schools in terms of rehabilitation?
I can't really speak for them, you know. I don't really know. Besides Henry Gurney schools, there are also schools run by the Education and Welfare Department for children who are considered delinquents. But I can't give an answer on Henry Gurney's actual outcome. I would like to think that what you're doing is mixing a child with many other individuals, some who may be more hardened, difficult individuals, and some who may be actually first-time offenders, and I think that's not a very good mix to have. You also remove them from your family support that they have to one central location. I suspect that keeping them with the family, offering them local support is a better alternative.
Yeah, the goal of caning, I guess, is to deter, prevent, and also as an act of retribution. But coming back to caning, what are your thoughts of caning as a disciplinary tool?
I think you may have seen a letter I wrote about caning as well in the press, and I think caning is a very primitive and, I wouldn't even call it a last resort. I'll call it an unacceptable form of discipline. It's a form of violence. I suspect the majority of parents cane their children. Yeah. I'm sure most of us actually have been caned in our childhood. And some people would go as far as to say, see, I was caned and see how well I've turned out, and would argue that sort of argument. But I ask myself always, what does hitting a child and using violence teach a child? It teaches a child that violence is the solution to solve problems. Violence is the way to discipline children. I think children parent after us. Children, I often think of them as wet cement, and we are writing in their lives. And so if you hit a child frequently enough, I think that child will use that method of discipline their own children, which is counterproductive for the next generation. As a whole, I think it just teaches pain, it teaches avoidance, it teaches you to not get caught. It doesn't really teach you discipline. I think discipline is setting love in order. It is actually knowing how to live your life, how to reason, how to make choices. And for that, I think parents must show the way. This is a very quick fix, but I doubt it really solves any serious problem.
What does the science and medical literature say about the effects of beating a child?
I think the vast majority of children who are caned frequently end up as delinquents. That's what the evidence suggests. Someone would argue, oh, they are delinquents because they are naughty people, that's why they were caned. I like to think it's the other way around, because they weren't shown the care and the proper discipline they required. They actually reacted adversely to being punished at home and then acted out this in other forms in society. So I think there has been no evidence that caning actually builds proper discipline to children. The vast majority actually turn out poorly rather than well.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Amar Singh about the abolishment of state-sanctioned child caning. I'll ask Dr. Amar about whether he would support the complete ban on caning in Malaysia. That's up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking today to Dr. Amar Singh, consultant pediatrician and president of the National Early Childhood Intervention Council. We're talking about the practice and efficacy of caning children. So in January, when the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development announced that they intend to make the act of caning a criminal act, the initial statement was poorly worded, a lot of backlash came up from parents' group, from religious group, from this conservative part of our country that seems to be in favor of caning as a parenting tool. Why is there such a groundswell of support for caning if the medical and the science say that it's not effective in dealing with parents?
I think that's difficult to answer. I think we need to understand our country culturally and socially and where we've come from. I think there are many possible reasons for that. It's been a heritage, in cultural heritage, that many people hit their children, and people have learned that. The fact that more than 40 countries in the world actually have stopped caning children routinely and outlawed it suggests that some parts of our world, some countries in the world are moving forward. I think that there's been very little support offered to parents to discipline children. I doubt even 1 in 10 parents has ever gone for a parenting course or even been actually sat down for a while with their own parents to say, this is how you should discipline children. I think nobody receives instruction. I remember one Calvin Hobbes cartoon, which was quite funny. He asked his father to sign a disclosure form to say, you have never received any parental training, so I'm the first experiment you've got, kind of thing, paraphrase it. So I think that's the kind of situation we are in. Nobody receives training, and then they hobnob whatever they can, and the two common mechanisms they know is shout and hit, and they use them. But there's so many other wonderful methods to discipline children. And I think the word discipline should come back to a proper place. It is a framework to live, not a negative connotation. And I think almost all discipline in Malaysia is negative. I think there are many positive discipline forms that we should put in place. So I suspect our population is not just undereducated, but never been grown into this sort of culture. If more parents had this, then we could actually share with our neighbours and support each other. Another issue perhaps is we are a disconnected society now. We never interfere with our neighbours or other family members. So if someone is doing something, we just kind of say, yeah, that's their child, we leave them to it. I think that's not healthy either. I think we have a responsibility for our neighbour and our family and other members of our family. I think we should actually get involved to support each other. It's not easy being a parent. And definitely not easy in this day and age to be a parent. So I have a lot of sympathy for parents.
We take it for granted that spanking is part of Asian society, Asian culture. But how do you reach out to these groups who believe otherwise, that the framework that you're offering, that you are saying is a more holistic method to discipline a child, to raise children, is a Western form of parenting? How do you reach out to them? How do you engage in dialogue with these groups?
I think you've got a point that you said earlier. Is it really Asian? I think if I look back at my early childhood, we had larger families. Most of us were busy entertaining each other and playing. Parents didn't worry about our safety very much in those days. And there wasn't that much caning because we kind of mentored peers quite a bit. Because family, we mixed with neighbors. We hardly any walls or fences in those days. I think a lot of unconscious parenting went on and support for each other. So I suspect caning is something that's been growing rather than diminishing over time in our cultures here. In terms of reaching out, I think that we underestimate the value of families. I think families can be powerful support for other families. I don't think there's an expert in parenting. I don't believe in that. I don't believe I'm an expert in parenting. I believe we've all got things to learn from each other. And what we like to do in IPO is we like to have parenting sessions where we bring many parents together and we have dialogue and we form networks and support groups that people can call each other and say, I've lost it with my kid, you know, can you give me some space? Or maybe somebody might take your kid for some time out and give you a breather. I think everybody needs that. We're in a very high-pressured society where everybody seems to have a lot of pressure at work and at school and elsewhere. I think we need each other to support us. I think our support systems are not as good as they used to be when I was younger. So I think that's one mechanism. But I think the state, the government, has responsibility as well. And I wouldn't like to see rigid formal parenting sessions, but I'd like to see a lot more parenting put into the mechanism, maybe in, I'm not sure where, premarital sessions or in school. We can't jam school with everything, but some mechanism where parents can go for support for wholesome parenting, not some expert 9 steps to fix your child kind of parenting style, if you understand me. Huh? I think we need some realistic groups. I do a lot of behavior workshops for parents, where parents can come and discuss their children's behavior, and then we plan together, parents planning with parents, how we can work on this particular behavior and then move forward. I think we need a lot of informal mechanisms like that.
There is a talk of creating a premarital course that all couples should go through before getting married. Would something similar be helpful for? Would you want a mandated or mandatory course for parents to take before giving birth to their first child?
You asked me 20 years ago, I said yes. Today I'd probably say no, because I think most of these courses are too rigid and narrow and come from a top-down kind of approach. I think if the courses are run in a modular fashion where people have a lot of dialogue and 80% of it is dialogue, I think yes. So I think the structure, who does the teaching, I think that's very important. Otherwise, I think you may harden individuals rather than actually support them.
What about the complete ban of caning? Would you be in support of that?
I think I will be fully in support of that. I think the reason being that you actually lose control when you cane. Most people cane when they're angry. Very few people cane when they're calm. So caning, and having worked in pediatrics for 30-plus years, you've seen the amount of physical abuse that I've seen. You know, 1 in 4 children in Malaysia is physically abused. That's data from my studies in the community.
How do you define physical abuse from physical
observable, sustainable injury in a child after being hit by a parent? You know, so you slap somebody, and then 5 hours later, there's still a cheek mark there. That would be considered child abuse. Okay, so people don't recognize that the definition actually is quite clear, and many people have abused their children. And my surveys are done of adults and young and teenagers of their childhood experience. So it's looking back at what they have experienced themselves. So 1 in 4 have been physical abused. So I think banning caning and is a mechanism to get parents to wake up and say, hey, how else can I discipline my child? If you still have caning, then people may not want to learn. That may be more powerful than parenting classes. But I suspect the media, like your radio show and other sources of media, should actually offer more ideas on holistic mechanisms. Timeout is very powerful, for example. Denying privileges is another powerful form. But the more powerful ones are positive. Thank you very much for doing something today. Just constantly praising people for things that they have done, which we don't do enough in our culture right now. Things like being with children. I believe one of the most powerful discipline methods is quantity time. Spending lepak, doing nothing time with our children, just hanging about, listening more than talking. And so our children can actually tell us who they are and we can help them move forward as people. So I think if we did the banning of caning, we would then encourage alternative mechanisms to come in, which could then become mainstream for us.
I can just hear the criticism saying we're too liberal with giving out praise. We are not scheduling enough tuition classes for the kids. They are being lazy. wanted to come back to that stat you gave about 1 in 4. Wouldn't your sample be a bit skewed, because children that come to the hospital would be either already injured or they're seeking medical treatment, and most of the abuse or caning that happens would go unreported and remain unreported?
Yeah, this is entirely community studies. I never look at hospital data. It only picks up less than 0.03% of abuse children are picked up by the services. That's looking at the stats. So most of my studies are done in communities. They're done in student groups. They're done in young adult groups throughout the country, not just in one location. And I can tell you easily that 25% of Malaysians have had the definition under the Child Act of physical abuse. I wanted to come back to what you said about the critics, about the critics saying that we are being too liberal, and you said something else.
We are not being very productive with a child's time.
Yeah, I think we need to ask, where are we going as a society in what we're doing? I wish people could come and spend time with me, meeting children. You see an 8-year-old who's a senator with burnt out, classical 35-year-old burnt out. She's got 1 hour of free time in a day after I look at her schedule. She's got piano and ballet and tuition and this and that, and she's just got no free time to be a child. Children need to be children. That's why we call them children. If a child doesn't have a childhood, they're not going to be a meaningful adult. Much of the problem we see in the workforce and adults today are because these people have never had time. We see doctors who all they look for is Friday. Thank God it's Friday. They just want to go home. They don't want to continue working. Whereas for us who had a childhood, we actually quite enjoy supporting people at work. We know that's part of our job because we've had a childhood. So I think we need to ask ourselves as a society, is it the end that we are looking for or the journey that's more important to us? I think the journey is as important as arriving at the destination. And that requires building into children an ability for them to become persons. And I think the personhood in Malaysia is very shallow. Let's not be surprised if our children put some of us in old folks' homes. If children start to abuse their elderly parents, which we are seeing, I think the fabric of society is breaking down quite often because we have put too much into childhood and not given them the space to grow.
So the Child Act is currently under review, and it's expected to be tabled in Parliament in June. What would you like to see reviewed in that Act?
I think besides the obvious removal of any physical punishment of children by the courts, which I'm appalled by, okay, apart from that, actually the Child Act is a very good act. The problem is not implemented adequately. I think hardly a tiny percentage of our population even know the contents of the Child Act. If they did, they'd be surprised. For example, the Child Act very clearly says when a parent whose child requires investigation, treatment, or management of some sort, medical management, is not given by the parents, doctors and the wealth and social services, the welfare department are required to take action and take this child away from the parents and put them in hospital. And yet, throughout the country, many children are denied health care because parents go and see a bomo, they go and see a sensei, or they just stay at home. And so the Child Act is there to protect children. It's a very beautiful document. I've seen the 1991 version. I was involved in the current 2001 version, and I have given my suggestions for revision of the present version as well. But I think it's the implementation of the Act more than the Act itself. There are also problems. The Act conflicts with the Penal Code. The Penal Code says when you're 16, you give consent for sex. I think that's ridiculous. I think a 16-year-old is too young to give consent for sex. You know, I'm sure they're mature 16-year-olds. The Child Act clearly recognizes that 18, you become more mature, and any sexual contact under 18 is not acceptable. So I think we need to put these two together. The Child Act also recognizes that forms of harm to children, especially sexual harm, are better described in broad terms rather than rigid terms. And the Penal Code describes them in rigid terms, which is not often possible to prove in any court of law. So I think the Child Act is a good act. A bit clearer definitions, a bit more empowering of professionals to support children. But I think we failed to communicate it to our public and to parents. The Child Act believes, clearly from the UN Rights for Children, that a child's rights are greater than parents' rights. They have to be, because a child cannot articulate their rights well. A parent can always force their rights on a child. So we have to follow that premise, and many parents will be very unhappy with this premise. But I think it is the premise we must go with, that we need to respect children's rights, and whenever there's a doubt, I think someone else must come in and have a look and see and support parents and the child.
On whose onus is it to strengthen the implementation? Where is it lacking at the moment?
I think that it should be everyone's responsibility. I wish the Child Act current changes and the whole Act itself was released to the public to have a look at. Even I can't get access to look at the revised Act. It's in the AG's office. I think it should be shared. I think the time for secret documents is gone, and we should share it. Of course, the welfare ministry takes a lead role, but in the end, the AG's office that decides this. A lot of NGOs and government bodies have been asked to put input, and we have done so, but I doubt public as a whole have been offered. And one group has totally been ignored, children. I think children must have a say in the Child Act. It's their act. And I think we have not solicited opinions from children and Child Act. I think we should have a child-friendly version that they should be able to read and offer their suggestions, whether they agree or disagree with this act and which provisions they disagree with. I'm sure they will disagree with caning, and I think we should listen to their opinion. Huh? And I doubt many parents have been actually approached to give opinion. I think parents must have a strong say in the Child Act as well. So right now it's a select group of people who have access to give opinions or have been approached to give opinions. I doubt many of them read the Child Act fully from cover to cover, you know. So I think we need more dialogue before it's tabled in Parliament, and it's going to be tabled very soon in Parliament. I think we should share it online, let the country respond, and then go with changes.
What is your view on caning of adults? Do you want to get rid of canings altogether, judicial caning for murderers and rapists?
You know, I think we need to ask ourselves why people commit crimes. The crimes that don't seem to get caught are the ones that bother me the most. Corrupt politicians. You know, people who use the system to rape the country. And those people seem to get away scot-free, never get caught, you know, can mask their wealth. The people who get caught are generally the poorer people. Very few rich get caught. And I think the rich are the ones who commit more crimes than the poor. So why do the poor commit crime? Some of them do it for basic necessities to support their family. Some of it because they've come from horrible childhood backgrounds and this is all that they know, and some have fallen in with bad crowd. I'm not at any time here denying their personal responsibility. I think a crime is a crime, and to steal from someone is unacceptable. But I'm not sure that prisons and canings are the mechanism to rehabilitate anybody. Again, you put people together with hardcore criminals and then you help them grow their criminal ability. You harden them, probably get homosexual abuse in prison. You know, I doubt you can come out of prison unscathed. You probably get hardened in prison. And caning, I think, as I saw that young man being caned, only hardened him. It didn't teach him a lesson. It just taught him, don't get caught again. You know, that's all that it teaches people. So somebody would argue, what about rapists? And you know, I work a lot with sexual abuse, and sometimes I myself would like to harm the rapist. So I can understand that people wanting to hit a rapist, but I don't know the solutions here. I just think that physical punishment against people is not an impressive mechanism for rehabilitation. If that's how it's being used. For retribution, yeah, it's obviously a mechanism, but not definitely for rehabilitation. And I hope that's our purpose for imprisoning people and caning them for rehabilitation.
Today's topic is caning and the Child Act, and from what you've written, you obviously have followed up with the child. How is he doing now? And maybe you'd like to leave a message for the conclusion of the show.
Well, I think it's a long way to go. You know, you can't undo changes in your life from a difficult childhood, but I think there's a lot of hope. And I think there's a lot of hope for most children like him. I've actually brought a set of creeds and beliefs that my wife and I wrote for children. We wrote this for a parenting group that we did about 15, 20 years ago. And I had another look at them yesterday with my wife. My wife's Dr. Lim Swee Im. And we both believe that this is a good creed to read here. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read it as
sure,
our closing.
Huh?
We all act and behave based on what we really believe down, deep down in our hearts. So it's important to state and affirm what we really believe. Firstly, I believe that every child is created to be loved, accepted, affirmed, and cherished. I think we must believe that. Children are not created for our benefit, but created for their own purpose in life. Secondly, I believe that every child is of great worth and value just because he or she exists. That is our intrinsic worth. His or her value does not depend on IQ, physical abilities, or achievements. That is their extrinsic worth. And too often in our culture and our society, we value children for extrinsics, not for their intrinsic worth. Thirdly, I believe that my child is a person in their own right. My job as a parent is to help them become their own person, to find their own identity and who they are. My job is not to mold him to become like me. I think this is a crisis in our society. We seem to want to mold the children in our own image, and that's frightening to me. I want diversity. I want children to become who they really are, and they might be very different from who I am, and that's, to me, a success, not a failure. Fourthly, I believe that every human being has a free will choice, and our job is to teach our children to choose wisely, and eventually we need to let our child, our adolescent, our adult, to make their own decisions, whether good or bad, and they will have to bear the consequences of their own choices. We cannot take away free will choice and responsibility away from them. And finally, I believe I'm not perfect, neither is my child perfect, and I must be willing to grow and change just as I expect my child to grow and change. And I think that's the asas, the foundation of parenting, that a parent needs to change and bring his child along in that change. And I hope parents would hear this and know that I'm not against them. I think parenting, as I said earlier, is a very difficult task. And I think together we can help our children grow.
Thank you for joining us today. I've been speaking to Dr. Amar Singh, consultant pediatrician and president of the National Early Childhood Intervention Council, about the practice of caning children and the Child Act. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.